Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
You can't start an intro by coughing and then saying welcome back, welcome back. We've flown the nest of Pip and he comes on to me and says welcome, welcome, welcome. And you've just done a really shit version.
Shit or definitely better.
It's all about the AWR. Are we recording? That's our thing. What's my thing? More my thing.
AWR with Dr. Feelgood and Chris Passion. Right. You're out. You've been muscled out now, pal. Right. You're just doing the acronyms for this show.
And what are you doing? Bringing your new characters.
We're using any of this because we're just fucking talking bollocks now.
Well, we might as well. This is part two of because I think it's a little special. Mm-hmm. Then I think we can be a bit ridiculous, can't
you're
we?
You're a little special.
That's just offensive. This is part two of our bonus Record Store Day special hardcore listing podcast.
Yeah, man.
With Elastica's very own Justin Welsh. If you've listened to part one, I'm sure you know exactly why you're here to listen to part two, because it was great.
Yep.
And it was a real insight into what it was like being in a band from his very first bands in the early 90s, going right the way through to the peak of Britpop, really.
Yep.
Being in one of the most famous Britpop bands there are.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on to talk more candidly about the whole scene and, you know, who he's drumming for now, which is just fucking great.
Mm-hmm.
It really enjoyed doing this one. He's such an easy person to talk to.
It was for me. It was because it was one of our first few, but definitely.
Had you met him before?
Taught me. No. Well, yeah, we had once DJing.
Yeah.
It was for me. It made me realise that I really enjoyed doing these podcasts with you, mate. Actually, and having Justin on as one of our first guests sort of reinforced it. It was something worthwhile doing and inspiring.
Yeah.
So yeah. Wicked listening to his story. So enjoy episode two. And just a quick little shout out to the Distraction Pieces network crew, such as Tuesday Night Jaw with
Jim Smallman.
Say Why to Drugs with
Jim Smallman.
Stop and Search with
Dr. Feelgood.
Enjoy, and we'll catch you in a little bit.
RedshiftRebels.com, y'all.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
All right, okay, let's start then. So,
all right, guys, do I know you?
Yeah.
It's been with us for 2 hours.
You two are just ranting out for 2 hours, isn't it?
Big thanks to our guest, Just, who's now going to talk about his other list, which he's compiled for today. He's also just... made us tea, which is good.
I was going to say, is it a cup of tea, or do you really want my company?
It's a lovely cup of tea.
And where are we today, Just, by the way?
We're at a music college in Brighton called Access to Music.
Okay.
And we're in the very, very freezing cold Studio 8. If only I knew you were coming early, I might have been able to bit of luxury, but we're all right.
It's good.
Yeah, I'm more comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. We've got sofas and we've got
sofas. The whiff in tends to
get not sofas and too hot, would you?
Get the whiff in where we record the others tends to get quite hot.
Yeah.
Justin, so it's actually a nice change. You're going
to ask your guests to just go down their pants. And
I'll come and answer the next one. So isn't that not just the alcohol you consume?
It's half an hour, yeah.
You're not playing some sort of card game.
No.
We have
naked final Friday. So bring pleasure down.
we've got the gold saga.
Trevor Horn will be with me.
Okay, right. So, what's your next list, Jazz?
Well, again, we moved on from what you sent over. I quite like the idea of just maybe, as it's later in the day, just talking about a few records that I particularly like.
Brilliant.
If that's cool with you.
Sure.
I think I've done with the 80s for a bit.
Yeah.
I'd like to move into sort of now, maybe.
Okay.
You know, well, so maybe some of these records are still, I guess, big influences on me, whether it be professionally or just in my life. So
yeah.
You know? So I thought, again, it's really difficult to try and pinpoint five. I mean, I understand that five, we have to sort of draw a line somewhere, but like you say, you just invited me to your bar and that we can come up with another five. But for now, I mean, I guess I thought I'd start somewhere where my life started to change was when I moved out of London with my wife and we moved to Devon. And the music that sort of...
When was this, Jazz? This is post-Elastica?
Post-Elastica, yeah. So post-Elastica, kind of the 90s was well and truly done.
Yeah.
And for Mew and I, we...
Because for anyone that wasn't sure, you was in Elastica as well.
We played keyboards in Elastica when we got together. And, we decided we needed to move out of London, or wanted to move out of London, but it was financially too expensive. And we didn't really have a place to go, but we'd been to a party in Tintagel with a friend of ours, and we thought it'd be a good idea to go down there for 6 months and see what it was like. We didn't know anybody down there, and the fools that we were, we moved right at the beginning of Foot and Mouth. So did we not understand what Foot and Mouth was first of all, but we moved to a cow farm. right at the start of Foot and Mouth. So this farm was right on the edge of Exmoor, and we didn't really know Exmoor was around the corner because it was pre-internet really as well. So we couldn't really work out our bearings or geographically where we were. We just basically pitched up on this farm for the 6 months, which then led up in... We just stayed there for 4 years, and then we bought the business and bought a house in Devon. Well, we were down there for 9 years. But, early years were really... I kind of got to the... After having only been in bands, really, since school, if you take it right back from school.
Yeah.
Because, my dream was just to be play drums in bands. That's what I was always going to do. That's what I still do to some degree. And I needed a change. I wanted to do something different. You know, I wanted to see what other things I could do. So we kind of basically for a year didn't really do a great deal. One, we couldn't leave the farm that much other than going to shops or whatever.
Yeah, but it's
just sort of try and do some different stuff. I mean, it was at the end of Elastica, but we still had a little bit of hope that we might be able to do another record. So we kind of emptied out the storage in London with our equipment, took it down and set up a little studio in the spare room in the middle of nowhere, you know. But of that time, I mean, it was great. We had a brilliant time. It was really, really, really sort of finding ourselves and just going feral for a while. Instead of just hanging around in the same old jeans or whatever, just going feral for a bit.
Yeah.
I think everyone needs to do it in their lives at some point and not sort of be dictated to by their jobs or whatever, or they're just their normal family lives or whatever. It's good for the soul, I think.
Yeah.
So this is what we did. We sort of didn't do a lot. We sort of wrote some music, and dug some holes and put some seeds in the ground and watched them not grow, or watched them grow in some cases. You know, just do some different things. Just try and find yourself to do some different things. And then, you know, sooner or later, we didn't have any real income coming in.
Had you stopped all music as such at that point?
Not really, because I was still playing. I did a tour, actually. I did a tour with a band, a metal band called... That was my metal bit.
There we go.
Jane the Star.
Jane the Star. Do you remember those?
Who?
Jane the Star with Giz Butt from Prodigy.
Oh, really? No, yeah. Bloody hell, you've got connected. You've got this.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I did, to be honest with you, I didn't particularly enjoy it. It wasn't something that... But I thought it would be challenging.
Yeah.
And I did a German tour, which I was promised the earth with Dev Hotels and with the beginners. And it was just a nightmare, you know.
Really?
And even Giz, you know, I'll get him one day for this, and I'll say him anything. But even like, he turned around to me after one of the gigs and he says, you could be in the band, you can join the band, but you've got to get drumming lessons. And I always remember that. I thought, fuck you, asshole. No, I don't want to be in your fucking shit band anyway. So that was the end of that. That was my introduction to metal. Excuse me, I just grabbed the tea. But yeah, music's changing, you know. I've got the deck set up and everything changing. And the record that really stood out to me at the time was Original Pirate Material by The Streets. It's just still a brilliant, brilliant record.
Yeah,
there was so much in that album. We were doing a little job, I think, like a little decorating job in this cafe, and it came on Original Pirate Material.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, but it was just like just stood out. It's just massive.
It really did stand out. I remember hearing Has It, because that was one I first heard.
Has It Come to This?
And I was like, well, what is this? Because you know, Garage, where I lived, was massive. Right.
Yeah.
So at the time, I was living in Basildon, and Garage was a huge scene. It was around my uni days, and I remember hearing that, being like, this is confusing because he's just talking over this effectively, but it's brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot to it, and you know, his reasons for writing it is recording, mate. Sorry, guys, Sue's pointing at the laptop, thinking it's collapsed. No, he's recording. It's not tracing it for some reason. I genuinely didn't particularly like it first time I heard it.
Right,
I was like,
right.
What? And then my ears tuned into it, and yeah, I was blown away. I think Turn the Page was the one that actually hooked me in, and now I was like, oh, fucking hell. Right, I get it now. Right.
But then for me on that record, though, it was almost like he was sort of singing, or not singing, he was rapping. He never called himself a rapper, did he?
Yeah.
He was, let's just say, for argument's sake, he was saying it how it was about the 90s in many ways.
Mm.
He was sort of killing it off. But talking about all those parties and all those places I've been to and all those people I've met in his lyrics, even though I had no connection whatsoever, that was his story. It got me. It kind of, I could relate to it.
Yeah.
You know, I knew all the characters that he was talking about.
Yeah.
And like I said to you earlier, sometimes the lyrics have never always, not always been the priority in music for me. It's kind of just how it feels. It could be the music, you know, the rhythm, the drums, or whatever.
Mm.
But lyrically, I got it.
Definitely.
Really early on. I just thought it was an amazing record. It still is. I mean, my copy is trash. I'm proud to say it's probably the worst record in my collection. And not because the content of it, it's been abused. And I'm kind of proud of the way it looks. If I lost that record, I could buy another copy. But it wouldn't be that
It's not that one.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
not
yeah,
the
yeah,
one that, yeah, the one
it
that you want to hold close to your chest.
It's not even like, you know, the groove's gone. It's just smooth almost. Cover's ripped.
It's
got beer. It's
got flint.
Stains all over the thing.
Mm.
It's horrible. But it's that copy.
I think
that's
how
really
Mike Skinner would want it as well, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
It really lived it.
We, around, just a little bit after that, I did a tour with Pip. It was the first tour we did, called Kindness of Strangers Tour, which involved me and him getting in a van, which wasn't a proper like a touring van. It was like a gold Toyota Galaxy. It was like a 6-seat, and we'd put the seats down to sleep in it of the night. And we toured the country, and he'd do his sort of spoken word, sort of poem rap sort of style, which was, in ways, there's there's contrasts to be drawn between, comparisons to be drawn between Skinner and Pitt. And but all the places we went, we keep on coming across these like UK rap acts, and they were shit. And it was because they were trying to replicate what they were doing over in the States.
Yeah.
They were trying to be Q-Tip, or they were trying to sound cool and a bit gangster, and it just doesn't work. I don't think it translates. I think like the grime scene has translated it in their own way, but we can't do US rap, and I think Skinner knows that. Mm. And he never tried. Mm. He tried to go, well, that's not me. I love all that stuff. I love Wu-Tang and all that other shit, but there's no point in me trying to mimic that because it's going to sound crap. And so he went that route, and it is a standout record. It is,
you know, but also what you're saying about the kind of keeping to his sort of Britishness, if you like, the fact that Britpop was all kind of finished and finally disappeared, and, you know, he was still so very British.
Yeah.
You know, he'd come out, you know, 5 years before, in the height of 1995, it would have been, maybe he would have created a different genre altogether. He was still very British.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he did that. He did that album on his laptop, which was really inspiring for me as well, because I just obviously moved out of London. Not a great programme. I had a little bit of a kit, had an old Atari sampler and stuff. But the fact this kid had done it on his laptop and then fucked off to Spain chasing a girl or whatever like that. Just finished it, I wrote the lyrics there. It's like, so anyone can do this. So. Yeah. Really, it was a real moment of, anyone can go out making music.
Absolutely. You know? And it was the shape of things to come, really, wasn't it? Yes. That's the thing there. And I'm sure you see in this building here, kids.
Oh, loads of them, yeah. Loads of kids doing it. And some of them really good, you know. Some really good. But I listened to his audiobook his story. I don't know if you've heard that.
No.
Because he narrates it as well.
Oh, great.
So it's really funny. And he's he was a big Oasis fan.
Yeah.
You know, because he would have been as a kid. He played guitar. His brother played drums.
I remember him saying he used to play Smashing Pumpkins songs to his girlfriend. He was quite into his rock and metal
stuff.
Yeah.
He didn't like Blur. He didn't like that side of it. And ironically, he ended up renting a flat in just off Ladbroke Grove later on in his career, and it was always like, you know, you could hear the Blur like hanging outside quite often. But he was, you know, really influential. Really influential. I mean, it's a shame he's not making music now, although he sort of crosses
because we're club night promoters. He does one himself, but he makes some really good stuff. He's producing stuff. He works with a lot of different people as well.
He was doing the dot, wasn't he, with Rob from the music?
I think he's done.
I know they were doing like quite a lot together, and he came off Twitter, didn't he, Mike Skinner? So I think he was a bit of a Twitter superstar, wasn't he?
Actually, he does talk about it. I recommend
Oh, I'm definitely glad that. He guested on Pip's podcast, didn't he?
Yeah, I think once he settled down, I think, because obviously his life is pretty full on.
Yeah.
And, he started getting fits or something like that, as far as I'm
concerned. Oh, really?
And obviously the amount of drugs he was taking and the booze kind of ended up going, getting in quite a bad way.
Right.
And stop it all. So but that's one of the things. Then he met his wife and a kid. And I think he does some film school stuff, but don't quite remember that.
Yeah.
Worth getting a book.
I always felt that his music felt reachable. Like it felt like you said, I feel like anyone can do it. And that's not me trying to disrespect Mike at all, because I feel anyone can do it, but you've got to have the commission, the passion to really commit to it. And he should be able to prove to anyone that the sky's the limit for what you can do. You know, he's someone that is inspirational, I think.
He put tons and tons of hours in on those first records. I mean, I think some of the fits were triggered by looking at laptop screens so much.
Oh, really?
I spent hours and hours and hours in front of the laptop making those records. And some of that was also album.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
triggered me a bit of epilepsy or whatever. So, but yeah, good, brilliant, brilliant record.
Favorite tune?
We Become Heroes, maybe.
Yeah.
How's it come to this? Still got to be, got a bit of winner. You know, so it's just a game. It's the whole album, brilliant.
Yeah. We still drop Don't Mug Yourself in the
Don't
pub.
Don't Mug Yourself. Oh, that's quite. See, that's one of those ones which you shouldn't really kind of think that's a bit one of the worst ones, but it is good.
Yeah. Still, mate, it just makes me chuckle, man. Yeah. It's up tempo, and like you say, there's certain situations where that can just pick up a crowd a little bit and not be too heavy either.
We went to see him play at Bristol on the first tour, and it was great. The whole crowd was going for it, you know. Morgan on bass.
Morgan Nichols?
From Sense of Things, yeah. He played bass with him, yeah.
He played for... I'll tell you what.
He's been playing with... Sense of Things are reforming, because I know Kaz, and he was playing with Muse.
I went to V, and apparently their bass... Because my band supported Sense of Things.
Yeah.
I love Sense of Things as well. I thought they were
great band, yeah.
Fucking bass lines from a different world. But I remember just watching Morgan Nichols on stage and thinking,
"That was a phenomenal player."
Fuck's sake, unbelievable! And then I was at V, and I'm not a Muse fan, and it was like, "Oh, Muse are playing," but their bass player
was it the same one?
Dad had died or something like that.
I thought he'd broken his arm.
Oh, I don't know. Something happened. It was like, and they had to get a bass player last minute.
Yeah.
And I thought, fuck me, that's some complicated shit they play as well, isn't it? It's all very proggy and wanky. And I was thinking, and then I said, my mission, I was like, it's Morgan.
Morgan. Well, he auditioned for Elastica when Annie left. And I wanted him in the band.
Really?
But what happened, we finished touring or whatever, and we needed to get into the bass player, but we did these few days at the depot, the place I mentioned before, and we had some auditions set up, and Morgan was one of the guys auditioning. Yeah. And I was like, I kind of knew Morgan a little bit, not very well, and I met him, through a couple of census things, and friends of mine, Jamie Hewlett and all that, he comes and he auditioned and we played a couple of tracks. Played him brilliantly, great. And I was like, let's have Morgan in the band, that'd be great to get Morgan. And they tell me, it's too technical. I was like, fuck! Do you know what I mean? It's too good for us.
You should have joined that band with G-Star.
You probably could play drums and bass. He's too technical. I was like, no. So we're not someone who couldn't really play. But there we go. Another story. He was great. Really good. You should check
him.
Great player.
And to check the Senseless Things, you mentioned Jamie Hewlett. All of Senseless Things' artwork
was all his.
Oh,
okay.
The covers were incredible, weren't they?
Kaz plays drums, and so he was doing the Gorillaz thing. So he was playing drums in the Gorillaz.
I never knew that.
Yeah, he was doing the live stuff. Yeah.
Wow. Didn't know that.
So he's a great again. Great drum. Great rhythm section. So, The Streets, brilliant, great live.
Yeah.
Great first album, and a grand doesn't come for free. Brilliant record.
Yeah.
It takes a bit of time to get used to that one, but some amazing songs on it, really. That was it for me, though, for The Streets. It stopped there.
Yeah.
I know I did another record, or might have been two, but it did stop on those two.
Can we go back a little bit and talk a bit about Elastica as well while we're working through your record collection? So when you left Spitfire, how did the Elastica gig come about?
When I first moved up to London, like I was saying, my technique for trying to find like-minded people to the bands was I danced to the ads in the paper.
Yeah. Really.
First moved to London at 16, Melody Maker, the classified ads. It's the way I just used to answer every advert for drummer wanted. Not really with much intention of joining any of these bands, but I lived in a one-bedroom flat with two of the guys, and it was just a way of getting out.
Yeah.
You know, this is in Leighton, which was bit out, but not anymore. And it was my way of trying to meet others.
Yeah.
So one of the auditions was for this band called Suede, and I turned up, and it was Justine, Bernard, Brett, and Matt, and their drum machine, and I ended up playing with them but didn't do any gigs. Literally after that one audition, they said, "We're in the studio next week recording a 12-inch, recording a record."
Yeah. What was that? Was that Brandless?
Pardon?
Was that Despite?
No. So it was a track called Be My God.
Right.
Which came out on White Label. For me, all they ever wanted to do, as far as I was concerned, I made that record.
That's
all they ever wanted to do, make a record. And they were offering it me, next week.
Yeah.
So it was a 12-inch White Label on this little label that they'd signed to. That's getting cold. Which never really came out, only the White Label. But
yeah.
That's how I met Justine. And then I subsequently was in another couple of bands. Justine called me up, said, "Well," and I turned up for rehearsal. And I was like, "Well, can't I be in another couple of bands, really?" So that was the end of that, really, the Suede. But I kept it really in contact with them all. Bernard ended up living down the road, so I was seeing him a little bit. And I was in a couple of local bands in London, but I used to play at the Falcon a lot with a couple of bands.
That was a barfly at one point as well, later on, I think. Yeah.
Right in the middle of Royal College Street. Real famous Camden indie scene venue. I used to play a lot. Any support slot, a couple of bands I was in would take it, and the stage was made up of crates. Crates or think, and pallets or whatever. Great venue though. But Roger Carroll, who was the promoter there, had a little label called E Records, which we got Spitfire on. Used to give us gigs, send you demo, get a gig. And Spitfire's drummer left, and it was the week I left work, and he called me up. No coincidence. And he said, "Do you want to play drums in Spitfire?" So went down to Brighton, met them all, without realising I was actually joining the band. I was on the next couple of days, I was away on tour.
Yeah.
And then we got the Blur tour. And by this point, Justine and Brett split up, but she was seeing Damon, and she came to a couple of gigs. I know it's a long way around, but when this, obviously seen me play again, I haven't seen me play, and I bumped into McGlastonbury when Blur were playing, and she said, "Would you like to do some recording? I've got some songs." And Damon will play bass for a bit, and I'll play guitar and sing, and we play drums, and I've got some studio time, which is EMI. So we did these first few rehearsals with Damon bouncing around on bass, and that's Damon being Damon.
Yeah.
And his park life era was already happening then. And we, we did. Within a few couple of months, we got Donna joining the band, who'd answered an advert from a guitarist player, and he was recommended through Mark Waterman, who was our producer, to play bass. So that's kind of in a nutshell sort of how it sort of happened. But that's how we met Justine, and I guess the rest is of course on the house.
Okay,
but it happened really quickly. The band rehearsed for a long, long time. Felt like a long time. So I'd been used to being in a band, and a couple of rehearsals down the road, we were doing it for like 8 months in rehearsing every week. Trying to learn to play some songs, really.
Yeah,
yeah.
I guess, I'm not blowing my own trip, but I've probably got the most experience of playing. So I've been doing it for some the others haven't had a lot of experience of gigging. And he hadn't really ever done a gig, and so it was a proper DIY band, which is what Justine's vision kind of was, really.
Stutter Come First?
Stutter was the first single,
It blew up big quickly, didn't it? The exposure in the indie press was huge quite quickly, wasn't it?
Well, when we were ready to play, we did a number of supports because the stuff we the demos that we'd done, we managed to get some demos done, which was lineup stuff, yeah. Vaseline. And we'd done them, we recorded them down at EMI Studios, which was just a basic little 16 track studio, great little studio, all the amps in the corridors, really noisy, you know. There was a the studio has got like a tiny little room, smaller than this, then a little live room, which you just about get a drum kit in, or be fine if you're doing vocals later. Then there was another studio, which was 24 track, but you were never allowed in that because Kathy Dennis would mostly be in there. So if you got a booking, you would keep to that booking, which was in those days was a treat. Going in the studios, yeah, it's a massive deal. Now you can record anywhere, you know?
But
then it was like, brilliant, we've got some studio time. But that studio time could have been cancelled right at the last minute because Kathy Dennis wanted the studio. She'd been writing for like Kylie Minogue. So their big writers would get in there, and us like unsigned acts would just like get the scraps.
Sitting there
hovering to get in. But it was great. It's that, you know, like I say, Amps in the Corridor, there'd be one in the loo, and that's the Elastica sound. Really?
Elastica.
Yeah, hired gear. No one had their own gear. You know what I mean? But yeah, we started playing. Once we got started, because of the connection with the EMI thing, we were able to get a few decent supports, like on the classic M25 circuit. Which you've got Bedford, you've got Chelmsford, Army, Navy,
The White
Windsor, Old Trowel.
The Old Trowel, I saw Blur at the Old Trowel.
Might have been at that gig.
Yeah, that was an early one.
Right.
No, that was, do you know what, that
we
was...
We did support them at the Old Trowel.
That was post-Leisure, I think. I think that was around pop scene time.
Oh, we might have done that gig.
Yeah.
Let's see, you weren't into the band then.
Didn't
Windsor Old Trout was like a treat. I was, it was one of those places. It seemed to me in my head still thinks it's always sunny in Windsor,
right.
And the swans are on the river, and you have an ice cream after science. I'm sure it's not really like that, but that's in my head. It seemed to be, you know, people punting down the river in Windsor. And, oh, there goes Blur.
Yeah.
Punting down the river, you know. There goes Kingmaker. There's Raider queuing at the door. It was all like that, but I'm sure it wasn't. But
so
I must have had ice cream once.
So who were the supports you done Early Doors then, when you were ready to play?
We supported Kinky Machine.
Brilliant.
Quite a few dates, and later on they supported us in Europe, which was really good.
What was their singer's name? Is that Louis?
Louis Elliott, yeah.
Because
yeah,
he went on to Rialto, didn't he?
Yeah. I did a tour with Louis as well. I played drums for him on a tour of the West Country with his, he's got a Louis Elliott and the Embers, he calls it, it's just really quite, it's got a bit of a folky edge, Nick Drake, Nick Cave, really lovely stuff. Louis is a great songwriter, he plays guitar with Grace Jones as well at the moment.
Really?
Yeah. So we did a few gigs with...
I'm loving this. I'm just finding out what all of the people are loving, what they're all up to now. Oh, it's brilliant.
We did Kingmaker. That's quite a few. And then we did, I think Bedford Esquires was just got one of those sort of who's had their first review in the Melody Maker.
Yeah.
So it was like Smash, I think we played with. And I can't remember who else. But that M25 circuit was seemed to be... You know, Bedford actually isn't that close, is it?
Oh, really?
I thought it was like an hour out of London.
Yeah.
Do you reckon really bands are doing the M25? Because we haven't booked, we've done a lot of live bookings, haven't we? But not recently. And I wonder if many bands do the sort of like the M25 circuit these days.
We've done that. We've done the Scroobies Pit Party in Bedford 3 or 4 months ago, haven't we?
Yeah, we did do that.
You could easily map them out quite easily. Yeah. I think... I mean, I know that at the time it was still the Zap, I think.
Yeah.
But going south didn't seem like you were touring. It seemed to be, I always think you've got to go north. You go south, you're just playing at home.
You've got to go out of the M1, then,
you've got to go north. As soon as you get out of the M1, then you're on tour. It's official.
Yeah.
It's not actually an official tour until you've done 1 mile on the M1, you know? Stopped at the first
service station.
All right, Will, should we take a little break from the Elastica story?
I've heard it all before.
I haven't. I've only read about it, so I want to know what all the other seminal Britpop stars are doing in their lives now. It's amazing.
Well, that's another programme,
mate. Rialto, am I right? They had two drummers, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Well, Julian, also, the bass player in Rialto, was... There's another story there, but I met him a long, long time ago. I auditioned for his band when I first moved to London. But he wrote the song with Wolfman and Pete Doherty for Lovers.
Lovers?
Yeah, they did that track together. So I think that's his big hit.
Yeah,
yeah. So, yeah, they were really good. Good band in the round, so.
Yeah, I saw him a lot. I saw him at the Army and Navy. I saw him at the Y.
Yeah.
And
Johnny was a phenomenal guitarist who played, and he was also in Kinky Machine.
Yeah, yeah.
A great guitarist. I'll tell you what he's doing on another program.
Oh, all right, so what's your next choice? You've had the Street, so what's next, Jeff?
Well, again, this is... the trip-hop thing, when it came along, was just something... For me, I say with the drumming thing, but I just love trip hop beats. And I'm sure you can talk about Massive Attack for years and years and years. You know, people love that band, but I do too. If it was any band I could be in, if I had a choice, I don't want to wish for too much, but I'd love to be play some drums in on Massive
Attack.
You know, so I've actually chosen Blue Lines though as an album, really, It was. I know we talked about the Streets, and we talked about the element of being able to do stuff yourself and DIY and do it on a laptop. But when Blue Lines came out, it was like, I need a sampler. I need to get a sampler. This is obviously I can't sing like Sharon Nelson. But you could sample. You could sample Billy Cobham's.
That's it, yeah.
Drum beat. You've got instant, brilliant record.
Yeah, totally.
I can't play like Billy Cobham, but I could nick his drumming pretend I did it. So, Safe From Harm on that great on that album is just brilliant. And I like the Mezzanine. With Teardrop and the 100th Window. I love that record as well.
Can you share a color on that one?
Yes,
yeah.
Sinead O'Connor on that. So every record that was coming out was great.
But
for me, I guess it's going back. That album, when Blue Lines came out, I was living with Steve Mackey from Pulp, and that record was being played a lot. Again with Portishead, not Portishead. But the sampler thing, it was like, we need to go and get samplers. Yeah. We had a basement in this house, a place called Keystone Crescent in King's Cross. Amazing. Little present, and we used to get houses for rent cheaply off British Rail, so they're owned by British Rail. We've got this great house. The house now has been sold by British Rail, and if you drive down that little crescent, it's worth stupid amounts of
money. Yeah.
But we were paying no rent on it at all. And we bought, it was both of us, we just got hooked into this idea of, we can make records. We can make records in our own house for the first time. You know, we're talking about Elastic and the Treat with the studio, but this was the first time you could do. You get an S1000, you spend £2,500 on an S1000, which is worth nothing now, and a couple of old synths, and get an Atari, and you can be making some music like Massive Attack, which was brilliant. Yeah. So Steve and I, we cut support Elastica, we collected or gathered bits of equipment together from all the bands that wasn't being used. Built this sort of makeshift sort of studio. I mean, it was nothing like any studio really, but it was us trying out how to use samplers.
Yeah.
And little record deck, just sampling records all night. Sit up for hours and hours just sampling records.
Yeah.
Not doing anything with them in the end, but just the fact that you've got a loop up, make
it's
a loop.
Like cutting loop. I remember when I started playing around with it and just messing around, cutting loops off things and sampling things is a lot of fun, even as you say, even if it doesn't go anywhere. But you can get amazing things out of very little when you sample, can't you? You can find something accidentally and loop it and be like, that does sound super. And that record, Blue Lines, does have like a lot of sample credits to, and make that again, like Cobham, they really make good use of it, but rather make good use of something that exists than produce something yourself that's a piece of shit,
Well, they're the same as you and I in that sense. I'm speaking for you hypothetically here, but you know, I could play a note on a keyboard, really. I didn't know what a C was from a D or a C sharp or B flat. But I managed to get a little bit of a loop going. I get a Juno and press the sequencer button, press one note, and wow, I've got a track.
Yeah.
You know, and they were doing that. They were DJs, you know. Massive Attack were DJs. I mean, we saw them not long ago at the Brighton Dome. And 3D's actually playing keys on certain tracks and stuff now. So 20 years later, he's been able to play two, three notes, which is great, you know. But you don't need to. It's using your ears, and they are great ears.
Yeah, definitely.
And they were making records with which I wanted to make, really.
Yeah.
I still do in many ways, you know.
That was definitely, I think the first track I heard was Unfinished Symphony.
Yeah.
And that blew me away, and that was to me a gateway to a lot of beautiful, like the trip hop genre, and even later on bands like Uncle James Lavelle. Oh, fucking hell! I mean, that first record, Science Fiction, is it kills me. That I love it so much. And I guess I think Massive Attack sort of led me into that sort of world. Yeah, it's a cracking record.
And the trip hop thing was like the streets was that it was English.
Bristol for a while, they let go of it for after a while, and you can claim it your own.
It all come from
I'm half Bristolian, so my dad's from Bristol, so I was allowed to go away, you know.
It was from that Wild Bunch scene, didn't it? And you know, there was some serious superstars in there, weren't there? And all come from the graffiti scene, the sound system scene.
That's where 3D came from, he's a graffiti artist, wasn't he?
Yeah, there was a rumour a little while ago that he was Banksy.
He would have been the most prolific person in the world, right? So not only could he... He was on tour at the time.
Yeah,
but that's what he's saying. They were massive for playing, weren't they?
Could you imagine that if he was, like, in 20 years? Oh, guess what? No, I was. Jesus Christ, man, how much talent have you got?
Did anyone else read about Shara Nelson and the court injunction?
No, what was that?
She got a court injunction put on her by Pete Tong for stalking him.
Really?
I'm sure it was Shara Nelson. I'm sure of it. For stalking Pete Tong.
That's interesting.
Pretty sure of that.
I wonder how long she was up. Well, I'd like to know more about that. I'd like to know the actual details of what she was actually, what she was doing, and what he was classifying as stalking.
I'd be quite happy for her to walk up and down the path outside my house. A little guy on a skateboard behind her. okay, so.
And you know, I could easily say that about many of the. I mean, the Porter said that Dummy was just. Phenomenal.
And live, that live album.
And that's unbelievable. I've got a friend who works who texts stuff that I've done out in the past, but he does a lot of Portishead stuff. And the stories, they're such lovely people, that lot. They're so down to earth as well. And the music they make is just amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Every record is just brilliant. Really humbling as well. Like, you know, it's just such a humbling lot, really, for how brilliant their brilliance is.
It was then, wasn't it, that kind of lifted the lid on the Spotify royalties. Did you read about that? Portishead, in 1 year, 34 million streams on Spotify and earned £2,500 in royalties.
Really?
And then, they kind of went to the press with it and said, this is how it is.
Exactly.
I actually saw Portishead's first gig, which I think they claimed as their first gig, which was way back. I went with my friend Justine, and we it was at Smashing. Do you remember Smashing Club in Regent Street? It was kind of one of the Brit poppy sort of clubs, but they had gigs on. And I asked to do a couple of videos there, and Paul did a couple of videos, but. Tiny little stage, and they played their first, which was supposed to be the first UK show, but I reckon it was probably the first annual show. Mm-hmm. 200 people.
Wow.
Brilliant. Yeah. When Beth was always like cigarette in hand,
you know. Yeah.
Amazing.
But even like when they put the third album, Machine Gun, on my first set, that
brilliant.
Fucking hell. Oh, mate, like, what a beat.
Yeah.
It's,
Alive. I just blow. That's, I mean, I haven't talked about this band, but No Order are one of my all time favourite bands as well.
Absolutely.
And I kind of toyed with putting them in or not. But I saw, first time seeing No Order, I've seen quite, actually played with them, shared the stage with them last year with a Lush gig in Poland. And it was brilliant. It was amazing, you know. But, just be sharing the same stage and but seeing the order and like when Blue Monday would come on at Reading Festival and those strobe lights go from speaker to speaker, blowing my mind. That was, and that's like Machine Gun.
That's what
it was almost like. We've got to do something like that because that is just gonna hurt when people see that.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot maybe your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Yeah, I saw them at Finsbury Park. They've had a one-off show, and they put out like Crystal and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was pissing down me rain. My missus was pregnant with our first child, and they come out and I think they come on the Crystal and then went straight in the Transmission. And I remember literally like I stabbed my head on my missus's belly, just shouting through her belly button, take this in, this is going to shape you, this is what it's all about.
I mean, if you look through some of the tracks that I've kind of gone through, I mean, you know, picked, I suppose, as many of them are kind of sequenced and bass electronic. And I think I've always kind of been drawn to that a little bit. Maybe it's my 80s kind of... being influenced by the 80s or listening to stuff, but certainly that kind of electronica thing is...
It's very strange that you say that, the fact that it's programmed drums and you're
a drummer. I love electronic drums, programmed stuff. I think, you know, I tend to find myself in guitar bands, and I think maybe that's another reason why I don't really listen to so much guitar music.
Yeah.
I know when the Elastica, we'll go back to the Elastica thing, but in America when we were touring a lot, once after that 95, you know, that build, I didn't really know a lot of bands. I mean, what was happening in the UK anymore.
Yeah.
I just listened to loads of electronic stuff, you know, and that was for me. Orbital was massive, you know, I just had that in my bunk, Orbital just blowing my mind.
Yeah,
it's like that, you know.
Well, we can fast forward. I'll drop back to Gastica thing in a minute, but while we're talking about electronic music and your love for it, and one of the first times we met was the band Hasbro Kid. James from EMS.
Yeah.
And that was very electronic, I think it's fair to say, isn't it? Like, so how did that come about?
Well, James is one of my oldest friends, and he's he cut him in half and his you know, his dance music. It's just that, is it? As a, you know, it's a great guitarist, James. Well, when he puts his mind to it, he's a really good guitarist. But we've all, I've knocked around and done a few little gigs with him over the years, and we used to share again, going back to the depot, towards the end of the depot's life, we used to have a little studio up there, an Elastica studio. And James had one round the corner. Ours was a bit ramshackle, and again, similar to previous studios. But James had a really professional setup, so we used to borrow all the gear off him all the time, you know. And we really hit it off with a lot of like-minded music. So we stayed friends for a long time. And when we moved out of London, you and I, he would come back to Devon. And then he finally moved out, and we'd always keep in contact. And we just sort of just threw some ideas around. He had a band called Beauty School with his wife, and I saw them play a couple of times, and I sort of bullied myself in, kicked the other drummer out, did a Keith Moon on him, and said, "Look, I'm going to be the drummer." And we did a couple of recordings. We never did a gig, but that sort of just sort of, it kind of fizzled out. And James had a few more ideas. I said, "Well, why don't we just do a band?"
Yeah.
But it was great fun, because it was all, I was personally just getting used to using the internet and bought a computer, laptop.
Kind of electronic kit on that as well.
Used two SPDSs.
Yeah.
And just used pads, a lot of it's all backing track. Mm. But we just threw ideas backwards and forwards. It was the first time I'd got used to using that idea of sending files backwards and forwards.
Right, yeah.
You know, which is so easy now, and I do it daily, but it was one of those approaches, let's try and make an album. He lived in Yorkshire, I lived in Devon.
Yeah.
We did a few gigs and we'd meet in Birmingham to rehearse,
yeah.
The two of us. There's a lot of work to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But we did manage to get the album together, and we put it out on a little label in Brighton. It was good. We managed to put some gigs. You gave us a couple of really good gigs, too. And it was a lot of fun. It was nice standing up, just the two of us in front of the stage.
Yeah.
Just playing samples.
Yeah.
Again, playing samples, what we talked about. But I've now progressed on to using the SPDS pads and just triggering stuff.
Yeah.
And it was great. So it was just a different thing. But, you know, it was getting harder and harder. We did a couple of shows in Russia. We went to Russia and played in Moscow, and then we got asked to go back again not long after. So we kind of were big in Russia for about 5 seconds. When I say big, we're like, you know, I don't know. Yeah, but it was fun. It was good fun. And we just left it open-ended, really.
Yeah.
It's not like we have a sort of day. James is doing his own thing. You know, in fact, we're going up to see him soon, probably next half term.
I think EMF still play occasionally.
They've got some gigs again. They're doing a few. They did a couple. I'm just going to plug my laptop in a minute.
What's it like gigging in Russia?
Sorry?
What's it like playing in Russia?
I'll come back to you. It was interesting.
Right.
I mean, I kind of always wanted to go to Russia.
Yeah.
I think it's a slightly insane place, and to be honest with you, I'm not that comfortable with Russian politics.
Yeah.
But I always found it quite fascinating, maybe the James Bond mystery and...
Yeah, that's there's an appeal to that, isn't there, to see it for yourself.
Yeah, a little bit of mystique about the place, and I think that was found quite fascinating. You know, they've got some awful, awful politics.
Yeah.
Now, I probably wouldn't want to be in any rush to go back. But it was interesting. We played... the first time we went out, we played a festival with the Horrors were headlining. And it was a great place. You would have loved it, Chris. All knackered old warehouses.
Yeah.
All street everywhere, little pop-up kind of art studios.
Yeah, yeah.
And we played in these like old warehouses. It's right downtown. Looked like everyone was a KGB, you know.
Really? Imagine it. Looked like any minute now,
any all the security guards were just going to destroy you.
It was quite a scary
place, but great. Really good first experience. And then we got offered to go back, and we played this mad little bar, which was why we were doing it. I've no idea. We supported a friend of ours, and... it was all dining tables, And it's just rich, overwealthy.
Opulent.
Yeah. And they had no interest in us being there. But this was like a hot ticket, this gig, which felt really odd. And we were really...
That's really unlucky.
Yeah. And then we played St. Petersburg in front of hardly anybody the following night. But the promoter got us over, sorted the visas out, did all this to really not play in front of that many people. Just a bit shocked. Couldn't get into it. But really happy with what we've done.
Yeah.
But was
that's interesting, yeah.
Someone's going to pay for you, go to Russia and line up some gigs and pay you and sort out your flights and your visas and everything. Happy days.
Yeah, I definitely have that mindset of Russia as well. Like I haven't been there yet.
Yeah.
And it's for all those reasons. And I agree with you on a lot of their politics. It makes me very sad. It's fascinating, actually, their political structure. Yeah. But also, it is that I'd like to... There is a bit of... It's so foreign, in the sense of foreign to me... I want to go and experience that alien, and end up in a sort of like warehouse rave, you know. I want to see what that's like.
It was really good. That side of it was really good. But, you know, we got ripped off. They got us out there. They only paid us half the money up front, and then he wouldn't pay us the next. And the next time, we had to almost threaten him, the promoter, to pay us up front. And the brown envelope was delivered in the hotel lobby. Yeah. It's all very dodgy. It's very dodgy, but it was quite fascinating. But now I've done it, I'm in no rush to go back.
Yeah. Tick the box, mate.
But we went, you know, and the fact that it was just the Asbo electronic thing, it was easy to do.
Yeah,
we just had a rucksack in.
Yeah, not dragging too much.
Set up and play.
Yeah.
I can only imagine it being a lot more difficult if you were a bigger band.
Yeah.
Well, and then also being... Notice that you were there.
Which is
what you don't want.
So, what are we going to go for next, mate?
Well, I've kind of... I know I talked a little bit about my electronica, but I kind of fallen in love with PJ Harvey again.
Yeah, it's easy done.
Which I kind of sort of... I don't know if I'd ever fell out of love with her, but I just sort of... Not in the attractive physically, but her music. I mean, in the earlier Alaska days, we used to jam on Sheena the Gig, and that was one of our sound check songs.
Yeah.
We used to try it, and then we get past the first riff, and that fourth part, or whatever. But the last two albums are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, they're very in the same sort of Nick Cave kind of writing. It's made me listen to lyrics again.
Well, I think, what's the album with Send His Love to Me and Come On Billy and Down by the Water? I can't remember what's the album.
That's... the picture of her hair.
Yeah, because that was obviously when she was, I think that was when she was with Nick Cave.
Yeah.
That album. And we watched a video to Down by the Water last night, and it could just be Nick Cave doing what she's doing, just dancing, looking sinister, sexy, slick. I remember watching. Can you remember that gig that where she played Glastonbury and she had the cat suit on? I think it was around the time of that album, and that was another thing that I think my parents were. Oh, she's rubbish.
Rid of Me. Of course, it's Rid of Me.
No. Rid of Me's before that.
Which one are you thinking of then? Not Dry.
White Cover.
So a couple of white covers you've got here. Come and have a look, mate. This one here.
No. Yeah.
No.
No, hang on, is it? No, keep going down. No.
That's a Peel Sessions.
No.
You haven't got it. No, you ain't got it, man. Someone's got an attire.
Is it?
Really? What's the songs you're talking about?
No, it's not. That was...
And it's Dry.
No.
You're talking about a completely different artist now. Oh, well. Well, my point is, it's just, she's really, the songwriting is second to none. I think she knows this is her best stuff she's been writing. It's really poignant. It's really of the time. And you know, you know, I'm talking about all the electronic stuff that I like. There's not none of that on this album.
No.
It's got Flood's production again, which is, I've always loved Flood's stuff. Did a record with Flood. It's the lyrics. It's just, it makes you want to listen to the brilliant songwriting.
Yeah.
Which sometimes that does pass me by, admittedly.
Yeah.
But, you know, she goes on makes me proud not to be patriotic as well.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of definitely not patriotic.
No,
and she really puts in a nutshell, you know, we do fuck up a lot in this country.
Yeah. I think if people actually read history, then how can you be?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the more you read history, it's like, oh no, we've been naughty. I don't think that many other nations would have done any different in that situation, but we were there and we've done some terrible things. We still do. And but she goes quite far to understand these subjects, doesn't she? And to write those lyrics as well. So I think that comes across. She travels with journalists, yeah. And she's been to a lot of dangerous countries, hasn't she? To sort of like,
I'd like to make a record like that at some point. It seems I've never kind of done. Had the opportunity to sort of go, right, we're going to go on a road trip or whatever, and write about that in that same way, you know, find out really what's going on and be, in her case, the journalist, really, and reporting it correctly. I mean, I'm not particularly fond of journalists in many ways. I think they get it wrong and they see it from their side too often, but she seems to say a lot that you want to say. And I've definitely sort of got it again with those last two records. Mm. I mean, I've chosen the two, you know.
Did she live right there?
The Hope Six Demolition and Letting Them Shake.
Yeah.
Right. I know she lived in Bridport for a while, but that may be different. That's where she's from, isn't it?
Right.
She's where are we talking in Bridport? We're talking.
Sorry, I thought Brian.
Oh,
does Nick Cave live in Brian?
Nick Cave does, yeah.
Right.
Oh, Nick Cave does, yeah, definitely. You see him around sometimes. I actually saw him you see Nick Cave as Nick Cave.
Well,
I have seen him wearing a Mickey Mouse sweatshirt and a baseball cap.
Brilliant. Fuck. Oh,
and the high tops, like he's just been skateboarding with his kids.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's brilliant.
I've seen him. My wife works in a gallery and he's been on a couple of private view evenings. And it's like, you want to see Nick Cave being Nick Cave.
But yeah.
You want a really well cut suit. Looking like a fucking serial killer.
But maybe you want to see him on the skate park. It's almost like it should be a Simpsons or something.
I want to see Radnik Cave.
Radnik Cave. Surfing.
But you do see him
occasionally. Oh, brilliant. Oh, can we go back and pick up on the Elastica story then? So.
What do you want from me, man? What do you want from me?
I'm just curious. We've kind of done what happened before and where you've gone. So obviously, we'll get on to Lush.
Okay.
Which is obviously.
We've only got a couple of songs left, so you can get in there.
So obviously, Elastica were blown up, and you've got a bag to the right of you there with loads of laminates and stuff that you for something. Just seeing. Looking through like the laminates and stuff, uh-huh. And seeing like gigs at Lollapalooza and things like that, like it looked like it was fun, though.
Oh yeah, well, touring's a weird one, isn't it? I mean, I think a lot of people hate it. I actually really like it. I feel really comfortable with it. Yeah. I like being on the move. I'm a little bit I get sort of a little bit fidgety being in one place. I like seeing the world, you know.
Mm.
One of my things was when I was at school was always I had two things. One of them, play music, and I wanted to travel, see the world. The best way I could work out it was to join a band and hopefully have some success. But it was it was pretty crazy when we got going, but only in a good way, I think, in a positive way. We did five tours of the US in a year where it cost over.
Wow.
And that we really, really did work hard, yeah. You know. We were going backwards and forwards, coming back, doing the normal, doing the washing and paying the bills and whatever, and then going back out a few weeks later. And it really worked. I mean, we you know, I'm proud to say that as a band, we did all right in America. We broke America, seriously. Whereas a lot of the other bands didn't.
Yeah.
And this might be also down to not only just hard work, but also the fact that we were signed to Geffen.
Yeah.
And they really pushed us out there and believed in the band out there.
And Geffen obviously had Nirvana at that point, am I right?
Well, no, not really, no, because we signed, it took us a while to sign to Geffen, because when it kicked off, everybody wanted to sign us. It was that sort of 90s thing where there was money everywhere, this band, sign that band. But we had obviously the same sort of treatment that all the bands were probably getting. I can only speak from what I've heard. But but they, Kurt Cobain shot himself. So committed suicide. Now, that's what everyone believes.
Yeah.
And and that was about the same time as when we were going to sign with Geffen. So it took a long time.
Right.
So we were in the studio recording the first album, if you like, and we just kind of ran out of money in a way because we hadn't signed a deal with Geffen, even though we committed to making that record with them.
Right.
So Nirvana, although we were just about to sign, that's when Kurt decided to call it, end it all,
yeah.
You know, or whatever way you want to put it. And, the other it took a while, but the other bands that were there, there was a guy called Mark Cates who signed us, and he had also signed Hole, Beck, Sonic Youth.
Youth and pretty good company.
And we ended up being on a Lollapalooza like you just mentioned, but that was a bit by default really, because Sinead O'Connor was going to do the tour. And she'd done 2 dates because she was pregnant. And I think she was a little bit too much. So she pulled out, and Sonic Youth, who were curating the tour and the acts on it, wanted us to do it. And of course, we just finished doing a tour in America. We just got home, and we were virtually just got home, still got valid visas. We were back on the plane and going back out again. So when that was going to be the moment that maybe have some time off, we didn't.
Yeah.
And we kept going. Until we had to come back to play a couple of committed festivals. One was, I think it was called Failure, the Irish one.
Yeah.
With the Blur and Stone Roses, the headline, and Paul Weller on that one. And Tea in the Park. When we came back, we did the two shows, and then Annie refused to get back on the plane. She had enough. Mm-hmm. So even though that should have been our point, in a way, we should have said no. But we're on the roller coaster of,
doing
really well. Why did
she just went, no?
She said, I'm going home. But we got back on the plane without our bass player, and the feelers went out for who would play bass.
Yeah.
And Melissa from Hole wanted to do it, Abby from Beck, or anyone, any band on that tour wanted to play with Elastica, really. They all put their hands up and said, I'll do the job.
That's crappy.
So
man.
She shows that, you know, she says the band was a good band.
Really.
It was good. I mean, I'm not going to say there was anything particularly bad about it. It was just a lot of hard work. And for me, I'm kind of comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Others might find that a little bit.
They say that with human, but I had someone do hypnotherapy on me for a while to help get over something that I'd gone through, And one of the sessions she was talking to me about, I can't remember the full details, but she said there's different, because we're tribal based, she says there's different types of people. Mm. And you have people who have got genetically within them quite dominant genes, like kings and queens and whatnot. And there's other people in tribes who were going from almost village to village. And she said, you are, you know, from talking about you, about your personality, you are like that. You're a rolling stone. You'll be more fidgety. You don't really want to be held down like that. So it's a character trait in us. Yeah. So people who go into bands, you might come into a band because you happen to unite over the fact you like or you want to make something.
Some injustice.
But yeah, exactly. But then when it comes to touring, it's like some people are going to be like, I can't fucking deal with it. And other people are going to be like, actually, I like the new information that your brain's taking in when you're going to these places, even though it is, you know, it's exhausting, it can be.
Well, it can, you know, I know a lot of people that really struggle with just being away from home all the time, you know. Fortunately, I've got a great relationship with my wife as well, that we're able to just do, like, if I have to go away for the weekend on a tour or something, like, it works, it's fine. You can come with me, and that's great as well. But, some people just really, just if they're not in their comfort zone, it's just, I understand that, you know, I find that really difficult.
I struggle every time I've been away from home. Don't particularly like the area I live in, but I always have a sense of relief when
the area doesn't like you, mate.
So, what are we going to go for next then, Jas?
Okay, well, I've kind of come forward a little bit.
And we've got
two records, maybe two albums, really.
Yeah.
If you like, or what, but really, the next one is I've chosen this one because I could have looked at, like, I say, New Order or something like that, big influential record. But an album that I've really got a lot from recently, and I think it's a great, great record, and I think the drummer is a brilliant drummer, very much similar to the way I play, I think. Is the Foles album, A Knife in the Ocean. But I was a bit late, I have to confess, a bit late with getting into the Foles. I was given the first album and I gave it away, this album, I did a little bit of backline stuff with the Maccabees a few years ago, and they were on the same bill as the Foles.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm going to check this out. And I just thought they were brilliant live. I thought they were such a good band live. And you know, I can't remember what's the drummer's name is. It'll come to me in a minute. Jack Bevin.
Right.
But he's just got that same kind of power a little bit that I might be getting a bit of myself a bit, but the way I play to some degree, and it's just quite refreshing to see someone do the similar sort of thing. Not a massive drum kit set up, but just really the groove on it.
Yeah,
and, you know, so I just kind of, and then I later find out as I really dig in and read the sleep notes, it's like actually Alan Moulder mixed the album, which is one of my great friends, and you know, I've done a lot of records with Alan and
a lot of Depeche Mode, didn't
he? Yeah, a lot of Depeche Mode, Pumpkins, Nine Inch Nails, it just goes on and on and on, you know. His work with Flood has been brilliant. And of course, he did loads of the Elastica stuff as well. Mixed Connection and things. But I just love that record.
Yeah, it's a great record.
It's fucking loud and you can crank it up. And
there's so much energy in it and raw emotion in it. I mean, like what went down as a track itself, it's a cracker. Yeah. I love that. I love how that song makes me feel. And also the composition of it as well, how it builds up, and then that sort of like the bass comes back into it, and oh man, and it just crashes again. It's a great, they have so much raw, and they've changed a lot as well. Folks, like sometimes their sound has developed and it has moved on, and I like it when bands do that, when they keep experimenting, and I think Foles are a great example of a band who have evolved into something. They are top tier, really. Yeah.
They can definitely fill a festival crowd, and it works. Whereas I've watched bits of some earlier stuff on YouTube, and it's not done a great deal. Mm, it's really thin, and the early stuff when they were doing all the kind of Afrobeat kind of guitar and Yeah, it's right. And there's some of that on the new record, but it's just got a lot more power.
Yeah.
Got a lot more Alan Moulder.
Yeah.
You know, but they pulled it off live. They can do it live. Yeah. It sounds awesome live. Yeah. Really, really good. And it kind of got me. I managed to see them over a couple of weekends, like twice, on both shows, and watched virtually all the show from the side of the stage. And like, this is great. Mm. I really like it.
Yeah.
So it was one of the, probably one of the best live bands I've seen for a while.
Yeah.
For me. It hit the mark for me.
Yeah, I saw them, I think, Glastonbury last year, actually.
Right.
Yeah, it was good.
I watched the Six Music live thing they did, I think it was last year. I watched that on the iPlayer, and it was great, really good, you know. So that's kind of what I chose that record, really.
Yeah.
I mean, the cover still reminds me of Ride a little bit, but I forgive them, you know. Obviously, that's influenced there, but I forgive them a little bit for that.
Okay, so before we take your last choice, of this top five. So, moving forwards, after Elastica, you've moved to Devon. You've also been making music with James as Hasbro Kid, and you've done some work with Sway a few years back.
I did. Well, I've kind of still been friends with them for a long time.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Simon contracted TB a few years ago. And because I'm still mates with him, I guess they asked me to do it, which was I'd never played live with Sway, so it was kind of a new thing for all of us. But it was quite a challenge. I'm not going to say it was an easy job, but I really loved playing with them, and it was their shows were phenomenal. But it was not. I had notes everywhere, all around. You know, so I only had a few days, I had a week to learn this 20 odd songs. You know.
Oh, really?
It wasn't like we practiced and practiced. It was, these gigs are booked. So it was a massive festival in Spain, like 30,000 people headlining. And the other one was, and then there was two in, one in was in, two in Scandinavia as well. But they were all like 20, so one night was 20,000, the next one was 30,000.
No pressure.
But you know all the songs, because I've known them for years.
So how do you prepare for that on such short notice? Obviously,
I was in this room rehearsals for 2 days constantly.
With headphones.
With headphones.
Yeah.
And they sent me a set, and then we had about 4 days in the main rehearsal. For the second gig, so basically we're just in there every day and just going through them. And then Brett is not... They're not loving being in the rehearsal room. When you've been playing songs like that for years, they're kind of already there.
Yeah.
So it was just Neil, Matt, and Richard, and me going through stuff over and over again, making different notes. You know, I was just notes. I had post-it notes, fucking shit everywhere. That much that I confused myself in the end, because I just thought, I can't remember where I am or what's going on. And there was one bit, one of the festivals I was playing like Drowners or something like that. And I just started this beat thinking this was it. And then Matt turns around and sort of counting. I just kept going until, and then it just like the band just came in and like, fuck, I finally got it. You know? Just kept changing the beat a little bit. And then it's like, that's it. Man,
that's how you knew is when they all started.
Have a post-it note. That's how it goes.
That's a lot, isn't it, when you're trying to take on all that information. Yeah. So what was the challenge? Was it that you had so much to take on all in one go, or was it the rhythms? Was there any challenges there for you? What did you find that was the biggest thing? Was it just the volume of things you were trying to fucking take on?
See, I'm playing in front of the audience, the crowd. To be honest with you, I didn't hardly know they were there that much. It was so much to think about.
Yeah.
And there were big shows, headlining shows. But it was just the volume of information to take in. You know, you can kind of get away with it. I'm pretty good at doing it, and I've done it many, many times over the years. Stepped in at the last minute and done gigs. And I kind of get off on the buzz of that.
Yeah.
It's the challenge. But the bottom line is, you still got to get it right when there's 30,000 people looking at you.
Yeah.
But with drums, you can wing it a little bit, you know. You can wing it a little bit. Just keep going. Advice: just keep going. I mean, Simon's a very different player to me, And one of the things I found in one of the Suede songs, which you, they probably not even admit to because they don't know because they've played it for so long, is things like certain choruses would slow down rather than get faster.
Yeah.
And that's only a feel thing that I noticed, but it's obviously that gives that dreamlike Suede
feel.
But you can't explain that. You can't write that down or anything. Yeah. You've only got to be in the hot seat. Whereas Simon and the rest of the band have played it a million times. Yeah. And they know it goes like that. But as an outsider who might naturally push in the chorus or whatever, finding themselves to slow down a bit, gets a bit tricky.
Interesting.
But I did, the first two, I confess to not enjoying them that much, but the Spanish one, it wasn't Primavera, but it was the same side, so it was fucking dick.
Yeah.
I'm glad I did it, but I like those challenges, you only gonna know if you can do it or not, but
putting yourself putting yourself out there.
So that then leads to Lush reforming.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get involved with that?
Well, the Lush gig, again, Spitfire supported Lush,
right?
So I knew the band really well. Chris was a really good friend of mine as the old drummer, which is the reason why they split up, because when he took his own life, the band split up, and they hadn't played for 20 years. But I got wind of the fact that they might be getting back together, and I was like, I can do that. So I called up Emma and just said to her, look, I've got tip off that you might be getting back together. And I was recording at Rack Studios with a hip hop act actually at the time, a band called Hawk House. So I was doing some stuff for them. And I called up and she was like, we don't know what we're doing. And then they had this discussion to call me back a couple of days later. So we'd like you to do it. Brilliant. So, but it was all under wraps. No one was to know about the Lush reunion. And there was a lot of work to do. You know, the band hadn't played for 20 years. Guitars had been in the loft. We did some rehearsing down here in Brighton just to try and get everyone's confidence up and get going again. But it was good. The shows were great. We did two nights at the Roundhouse. Sold out, two nights at the Roundhouse.
Do you like playing there?
I've always wanted to play the Roundhouse. Love that place.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it's become one of the main venues in London venues now, hasn't it?
Got to check out At the Drive-In about 6 months ago. It was good. We got lucky, got Pip said, what are you doing tonight? I was like, nothing.
Yeah, great.
Thinking I wasn't gonna do anything. He's like, do you wanna come in? I was like, yes. Yeah. And it was cracking. It was really, really
brilliant. It's just about the right size because it's not huge. Mm-hmm. And a lot of bands can get, a lot of bands can do a couple of nights there as well, and sell it out. It's something, get 1,000, I think. Yeah,
it's that upper ring as well, isn't it? That it catches, that's where I think they can pack it, the extras in.
Verve done a secret, low key kind of warm up comeback thing there a few years back now. It wasn't a particularly good gig, to be honest. But the sound was incredible.
Lush pulled out the stops. They did an amazing light show, and we took some of that away with other festivals. And the American gigs, went to America twice. Played at Coachella, and we played. I know all the shows in America were amazing. We're looking at 2,000 to 3,000 sold out every night. Brilliant, old theatres. So it was really good. I really enjoyed it, And we did a couple of radio things and stuff like that. But it was good. It's a shame it came to the end,
Is it?
The band had called it a day. They were all going to do their own thing. I think they had a really good year of it.
Why did they put it together in the first place? Why did they do the comeback thing? Was there anything that drove it, or?
Well, I think initially there was some really good offers on the tables, and they found it was time. Right. It was the right time to do it. Yeah. One of the reasons they hadn't done it in the past at all was Mickey, as throughout this whole thing, she kept her job. She worked for a magazine, and she was going to keep that job. But when you've been in her job for a certain amount of time, they would give you a sabbatical of extra amount days off. So she had about an extra 40 days or something, and to which she said, well, this is the year I can do it because I've got to use these dates. So she was juggling them and then going to America and flying back in on the Sunday and going to work on the Monday just to do all these dates. But so I managed to make it work. And of course, families and things like that, they had a good run, and they decided to call it a day. But it was good, you know, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So
thank you, Lush, for asking me.
Yeah.
Nice playing on a big stage again. So, last song.
Yeah, let's do it.
Are we going to get emotional now? Or? Well,
it's been good chatting. It's been really fun doing this, Justin, before we go on to that last song. So thanks so much, mate, for coming in and giving us a sort of like a rundown of some of your influences, 80s bands and more recent.
Yeah.
And of course, listening to your sort of the different bands you've been in, and also how you got there as well. I think that's always good for other drummers who are listening to this to sort of like go, oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
He isn't unreachable, and you know, you can just plug away at it.
Well, my advice would be, Daniel's follow my advice. You know, there's some good in there, but you know, make your own mistakes. That's what I say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, the last one I've kind of chosen is a bit of a weird one, really. But this was, I did quite a lot of driving, a lot of road trips a couple of years ago, and I was driving through Scandinavia a lot and up to Norway. And Efterklan album, Pyramidia, was the sort of soundtrack to a lot of that.
Yeah.
This band I'd never even heard of.
Yeah.
Me and my wife got us tickets to go and see them at the Dome.
Right.
In Brighton. And they were playing the album with an orchestra, symphonic orchestra. And it was just blew me away. The sound was incredible.
Right.
These horns and incredible. I highly recommend it. It's a brilliant record. And another thing, going back to the sampling thing, they made a lot of the record they went off to and that sounds a little bit pretentious, but they went to this old mining town.
Yeah.
And in Norway somewhere, and just camped up, deserted mining town.
Yeah.
Camped up for a week or whatever, and just sampled everything, all the sounds. So they're in the gymnasium, their old oil drums, all the inhabitants of the place just left. Everything was still there. And they camped out for a week in this place in the gym or whatever, and sampled everything. So a lot of the sounds on the album are in that record. And I just find that they're just a band that really, still don't know much about them.
Yeah.
But
they're on 4AD.
They're on 4AD, yeah. And they're just really chilled. The gig was really chilled.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, they came on stage, wearing dicky bows and a glass of red wine.
Oh, well, obviously, we'll put it up on the Spotify playlist. Mm. But what could you compare it to? Anything that you know?
Well, it's quite 4AD.
Yeah.
It's quite a lot of atmosphere. Baric stuff going on. You can tell by the orchestras and that. It's quite dreamlike.
Yeah.
There's a particular track, Sedna, which I just find really, really quite haunting and really nice. It's really good. The great kind of soundtrack stuff, which is why I loved it for the journey.
I was going to say, for journeying through that sort of landscape.
Going through the landscape
well.
When you've got waterfalls to the left, waterfalls to the right,
yeah.
You know, frozen lakes. On my own, driving on my own in a van. Going through the mountains, going on. You go through the tunnels, and you're 20 minutes, you're still in the tunnel going up the mountain. Incredible. And you've got this on, it's just like, you're in another world.
That's a new one for me, and I'm going to look forward to that.
But some people might not get those records, you know, but it captured that particular time.
Yeah.
My wife, thank you, Lou, for introducing them to me. And the gig at the Dome was something else.
Yeah.
There's an element of, you know, like Bjork and things like that. You know, and she goes down that road of mad singers. There's loads of that sort of stuff on it.
Is there vocals on it?
Loads of vocals. Check it out.
Yeah.
You know, and if you could play the track now, play said that as the cool. swan song to the day.
Nice. Okay.
It's a beautiful piece of work. Yeah.
I had a similar experience very recently when I went snowboarding about a month ago, I guess, and I hadn't heard Pink Floyd's new record.
Right.
And we arrived sort of as the sun was setting, and driving, listening to that, and driving through the Alps was just excellent. It's just a great way to experience a record. The darker it gets, the more you're paying more attention to what you're listening to as well. It's a fact. It's magical.
One of my first experiences that on a road trip, it was when the internet first kicked in, and I was living with Steve Mackey, he managed to get one. It's like dial up. We're like, wow, Will's a massive place. This is brilliant. Let's go on a road trip. So we went to Norway again, actually Norway. But we just had one album. We had Ronnie Size's Represent. Right. Yeah. It hadn't come out yet.
Yeah,
we got a copy of it.
Oh, yeah.
And we just had that in the hire car. We basically went on this tour into Tromso, and we hired the car, and it was going to be 3 days, and we were going to be back. So we hired the car. Wanted to see the midnight sun. That was the idea. So it was going to be 24-hour daylight all the time. We picked up this car. We drove it to the little ferry port, and we were going to sail through all the Freuds all the way up to the furthest northern point you could get, and then drive all the way back quickly to get back. And we drove up to the ferry port, and there was this tiny little ferry. I was like, how the fuck are you going to get a car on the ferry? This little crane just come down and just picked it up, plonked it on the front of the boat.
What?
Like, literally just on the front of this boat. We got on and we sailed for 24 hours into the midnight sun. We got off, drove to the furthest northern point you could get to. The road just ends. Looked at the 24 hours and drove all the way back with Ronnie Size.
Mate, that's amazing.
It's just that album. Still, when I hear it, it's that's it.
She's cracking
it. It's that 3 days.
Yeah.
You know. But you've got to have those soundtracks occasionally.
Yeah. Definitely.
And they might not mean anything to anybody else, but if you get it, that'll stay with you.
Though. Yeah, that intimate experience with it, definitely.
I go swimming in the mountains, I go swimming in the lakes and the rivers, and it's always, if I'm going to go and drive up to Hull or something like that, I won't really think about what I'm listening to. I'll just plug it in and whatever's on. But when we go up in the mountains, you're always a little bit more, well, what are we going to listen to when we all of a sudden we're off the main roads, and all of a sudden there's mountains either side, like you say, lakes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's the film score to the Fassbender film Shame.
Right.
There's a track on that called Unraveling. It's like a classic.
Just gets you sometimes. The power of music.
It is, and you just think it, and it just, like you say, it just works in that kind of environment, yes.
When you're in nature, you remove every, because all you're seeing is nature and natural.
Yeah.
You're removing the human elements, you're more familiar with when you're listening to music.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's cool. Very cool.
All right, well, I can't thank you enough for doing this.
Yeah, man.
You're welcome. Are we done?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
I thought
we're just getting going.
Yeah. You can talk as much as you want, mate.
Well, in the future, we can. I'm sure, we can do other lists and other things that you want to talk about as well.
I'm gonna go and take my dog for a walk.
I
listen to Ethel Clan.
I knew when we were talking to me, Chris is like, "Who do you want to chat to?" I thought, "I'm gonna ring Just because he's always." Been an absolute gent every time we've ever done anything together, and you've had a really interesting life.
Continue.
Yeah. He's not dying.
Yeah, I'm not.
Whatever's around the corner and whatever's next, then yeah, I hope it's all fantastic, mate.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again, mate.
Thank you. Yeah, much appreciated, Justin. Cheers, mate. And we have a cool little day there.
Yeah, mate.
Catch you soon, guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Are we recording?
I think we're recording, mate. Yep.
There you are. Hashtag. That was good. That was good.
It was excellent.
Sorry, I said that like we've just made love. that was great.
I get it a lot, mate.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
What do you like to do after just making love? What's your first sort of thing? Do you apologise or do you like?
Yeah, there's generally that kind of sorry that that shouldn't have been as quick as that. There's a lot of apologising, a lot of self-loathing, and then where to bury the body.
I'll get my shovel.
Let's do another one, shall we?
Okay, all right. Ready? Are you ready? Okay, ready?
Are you ready? Are you ready for love? Any more ready-based songs?
Ready or not, here yep. I come.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
what
it.
What was some... Dun, dun, dun. No, it's uptight, isn't it? What was that one called?
Ready to Die, which is obviously a biggie.
What was the Motown one? Get ready, get ready. Yeah, is that one?
Yeah.
Any more ready bass songs?
Ready as a Teddy was probably.
No, there's never been a Ready as a Teddy song. Fucking weirdo. Listen, hashtag in your ready bass songs.
Have we started? What is this?
This is the bit at the end where we say thank you everyone for listening,
And thank you to our guest
and thank
Justin
you to
Murray.
Justin, who was a brilliant guest. I know we say that about all our guests, that they were brilliant and they were lovely, but we ain't had one that's been an arse, have
well,
we?
No, everyone's I don't just want been like a prick on either.
Well, there's that. Yeah, everyone's just been really nice, and they've all agreed to do this, and. None of them know the fuck me and you are.
No.
Like,
they know me from Crime Watch.
But Justin, like all of our others, has been a really nice person to sit and have a chat with.
Yeah.
And like I say, as well as thanking Justin, we've got to thank you guys because this is going really well so far.
Yeah.
And we're having a blast doing it. And thanks loads. And please keep retweeting and sharing and tell your pals that if you want to hear a couple of dickheads talking to some smart people, go and have a listen to Hardcore Listening Podcast.
Yeah, subscribe, bitches. And also, it's Record Store Day, so go and support music. Go and buy a fucking record.
Yeah. Have you bought one?
It's not Record Store Day yet. But
it's what?
I will when it is Record Store Day.
Oh, okay. Make sure you do.
I will do. You make sure you do, prick.
You do? I'm going to find a better friend.
Thank you very much. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listening, the podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.